You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hi, this is Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President for Public Policy at the James Dobson Family Institute. Welcome to our weekly podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. Recently, we observed the 60th anniversary of Martin Luther King's historic speech at the Lincoln Memorial. The speech has come to be known as his I Have a Dream speech, even though that portion of it is really a small part of the overall address. Now, I want to play for you about 2 minutes of King's remarks about his dream, and then I want to share some thoughts with you about why some are rejecting that dream and what we should do in response.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. And every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This will be the day, this will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, My Country, Tears of Thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last, thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
You know, I'm still deeply touched when I hear the words of Reverend King delivered 60 years ago at the Lincoln Memorial. I remember what I felt like then, and I still have those feelings today. That speech was filled with moral, biblical truths, truths that unfortunately are rejected by a lot of racists and by powerful, godless neo-Marxists in our country today. Now, I want you to take a little bit of a trip with me. I'd like to try to get you to imagine what it was like at that time in America, here in Washington, D.C., when Martin Luther King was preparing for this big day and the speech he would end up delivering. What was happening here during that period of time? Well, the night before, on August 27th, King met with his aides in the lobby of the Willard Hotel, not far from where I'm speaking to you right now. He wanted the advice and counsel of his aides. The aides argued, frustrating King. They gave him different advice, contradictory advice. He got a little angry, quite frankly, himself, and he told them he was going to his room to seek in prayer the counsel of God. Just think about that a second, because it says everything about Martin Luther King. He believed in the personal God of the Bible. He believed that if he had a decision to make, the best and wisest thing he could do would be to seek God's counsel. The whole argument against racism that he made was based on his belief in the God of the Bible, and that we were made in the image of that God. When Martin Luther King rose early the next morning, he was greeted by a sweltering, hot, and humid day in Washington, D.C., and the mood of the country was hot, too. There was a lot of fear that the march to the Lincoln Memorial that would take place that day, and then at the memorial there would be these speeches, including King's, that march and that rally could end up in a violent riot. March and rally organizers were worried about whether a crowd would show up. They thought maybe the fear would keep people away. They were astonished that morning as buses and trains began to arrive in Washington, D.C., until finally the crowd swelled to what was estimated to be 250,000 people. That would make it the largest gathering ever in the history of Washington, D.C. up until that time. Now, this wasn't just a Martin Luther King event. Six civil rights groups sponsored the event. The speakers, and there were many of them, were each given 5 minutes to speak. King's speech was the 16th item on the agenda. There were 9 speeches before his. The national anthem was sung. There were prayers. There were 2 sets of gospel songs. One of the singers of the gospel songs was Mahalia Jackson, who brought the crowd to tears with the hymn, "I've Been Rebuked and I've Been Scorned." When at last King got his turn at the podium, the summer heat was at its height. The temperatures were in the low 90s. The crowd was exhausted. And quite frankly, some of them had already left. In fact, if you were in that crowd, look, they didn't have the electronics we have today. Many in the crowd, not that far from the stage, literally would not be able to hear what King was saying, or any of the speakers for that matter. Witnesses say that King's speech was sort of adequate, nothing really remarkable. Certainly the beginning of it was run-of-the-mill. It was fine as far as it went, but there were a lot of people expecting him to give something that would be historic, that would be memorable, that people would point back to. Mahalia Jackson was still on the podium, on the dais at that point, and perhaps sensing that while King was doing a good job, he really wasn't rising to the occasion. She leaned forward and said to him, "Tell him about the dream, Martin." Wow, what a moment. Now, look, Martin Luther King could have heard that coming from behind him and thought to himself, what is she doing interrupting me? Maybe he would have resented what she said. He could have ignored it. But Martin Luther King and Mahalia Jackson were very close personal friends. When King would get depressed, and he got depressed a lot because of all the things he was dealing with, the constant death threats to him and his family, the opposition that he faced, even from our own government. When he would get depressed, he would often call her for what was called between the two of them a little gospel music therapy. One of the most favorite songs he would request that she would sing to him over the phone was "That Old Rugged Cross." Now, you see, Ms. Jackson had heard King speak in Detroit a few months earlier, and in Detroit, he first delivered this theme of "I Have a Dream." She was deeply moved by it, and she thought, perhaps God put on her heart, that was exactly what he had to say to this throng of several hundred thousand people standing in front of him. When she said, "Tell him about the dream," it was not in his prepared text. But you can see him push the prepared text away and grasp the sides of the speaking stand. And at that moment, Martin Luther King became again the Baptist preacher that he always was. The rest is history. King's dream inspired the nation. He loved America. He loved God. He said our goal should be to judge each other only on the basis of our moral conduct, by our character, not on the basis of our skin color. Because whatever race we are, King thought, we are members of the human race made in God's image. That's what the whole I Have a Dream section points to. Now, you know, today many textbooks describe Martin Luther King as merely as a social activist. Sadly, he is seldom described as a Christian minister. But when King himself was asked about what guided his life, what was the most important thing to him, he never hesitated to tell you. And here's what he said. This is a quote. "I still believe that standing up for the truth of God is the greatest thing in the world. This is the end, or this is the purpose of life. The purpose of life is not really to be happy. The purpose of life is not to achieve pleasure and avoid pain. The purpose of life is to do the will of God, come what may." Everything Martin Luther King said about the purpose of life is rejected. Everything Martin Luther King said about the purpose of life is rejected by today's neo-Marxist left. Well, my old friend, former Secretary of Education Bill Bennett, points out it was King's Christian faith that informed and directed his political beliefs. You know, years later, tragically, Martin Luther King was assassinated. There was a plaque that was put up outside the room on the balcony at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. King walked out of that room and stood on the balcony when he was gunned down by James Earl Ray. The plaque quotes Genesis 37:19-20. "They said to one another, 'Behold, here comes the dreamer. Let us slay him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams.'" James Earl Ray destroyed King's body, and the godless Marxist left has been destroying his dream. That dream controls many of the faculties on our university campuses. It is very powerful in places like Hollywood. It's got a foothold literally in government right here in Washington, D.C. That Marxist, godless left doesn't believe the truths that were stated so eloquently in Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. It is up to us, men and women of faith, to pick up King's torch and to fulfill his dream of building an America in which all of us are judged not by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. Well, this is Gary Bauer with the James Dobson Family Institute. I thank you for being with us today. I hope you're inspired by thinking back on Martin Luther King's message and along with us at JDFI that you will rededicate yourself to bringing the biblical truths that Martin Luther King brought to the Mall of Washington, D.C. 60 years ago, to bring those truths today to the public square in America so that we can once again make America one nation under God. Thank you very much.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.